It's called The Black Man Is God.
God.
It's called The Black Man Is God.
Next album.
This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. Be the easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me? You really do? Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet, a prophet.
The goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreamed from karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the Jackson. Nah, I was legend. Rest in peace, Pop's a legend. Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest today will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached him, blew up. Who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like that. Never make me think hard. Just make me angry. Never make me go underdog. And never talk about who's gonna stop me. Or ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not a heavyweight in the world fast enough to stop me.
Welcome back, everybody. It is exactly 3 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, July the 6th, 2017. I hope you all enjoyed your Independence Day. Jay Hicks is back, Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. I say all the time that we have a lot to discuss, man, and this week is no different. I mean, we got NBA free agency, we got rap albums to discuss and all this other kind of stuff. So what better way to have all that at the table and to bring all that together than with my man Vince Hicks, man. So we're back with Vince on the Hip Hop Sports Report preseason podcast of the year. We're coming live and direct from Cleveland, Ohio, my hometown, and my cousin Vince's hometown. We're actually in his basement recording this as we speak. So Vince, how you feeling this evening?
I'm great, cuz. Feeling good.
Feeling good, man. So I told him just seconds before we started recording, I said, man, we have no script for this. So, and we don't have a script this time around, y'all. So what we're going to do is we're just going to talk about sports and music because I know that's what y'all want to hear. And we got a lot to discuss. So I'm going to start off by just plugging the website as usual, hiphopsportsreport.com. You know where to find us. You know how to hit up the podcast on iTunes, and we're also on Stitcher Radio as well. I'm still thinking about SoundCloud, though. I don't know if we're going to go SoundCloud route or not. I don't even really like SoundCloud, to be honest with y'all, but a lot of other people seem to enjoy it. So for you, I'd be willing to go that route. But in the meantime, you can catch us on iTunes and Stitcher for sure. And if you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, please do, or go ahead and give us a rating so we kind of bump us up on the hierarchy of podcasts, because there's about 25 million of them now. So we need all the help we can get to kind of boost our ratings a little bit, y'all. So please go ahead and give us a shout and give us a rating, give us a comment, or let us know what y'all want to hear or anything like that. And we'll be there at your beckoning call, I guess you could say. But for now, let's go ahead and dive into some few things. And now, and there's a special podcast potentially coming up with a guy who's done some work with some legends in the industry. So I'm just going to kind of give a little subtle plug to that, but we'll see if that comes to fruition. And shout out to that individual. They know who they are if they're listening to this. But you know, we've had Jabari Davis, we had Mark Hicks on with the NBA mark draft, another roaring successful mark draft, of course. So we've had that, so shout out to him. And I know there's a lot to talk about with regards to sports and basketball in particular, man, but we're gonna put that on the back burner, man. We're gonna talk a little hip-hop out the gate, man. So as you guys recall, Vince was with us last summer when we did our entire summertime feature on hip-hop in 1996, in the summer of 96, what that really meant to the industry and how the industry's changed since then. And that was fantastic. If y'all want to go back and listen to that, you can on iTunes or Stitcher or on hiphopsportsreport.com. We did a whole podcast about hip-hop in 96, and one of the key players of hip-hop at that time was a guy named Sean Carter. And that same Sean Corey Carter is back at it again, y'all. So he had just announced at the time of our last podcast on June 20th that his new album 444 was gonna be dropping. And so we knew that, right? And we knew that we had to take time out to listen to that before we got back to y'all. I've listened to it, Vince, you've listened to it as well.
Exactly.
Give us your thoughts out the gate, bro. What you think?
I think it's an amazing piece of work. you know, it's kind of like LeBron, to do a sports or basketball correlation. It's kind of like LeBron, you know, like they talked about LeBron's finals appearance and his stats and everything, his finals, but they always said, this is a guy in his 13th, 14th year doing this. Jay-Z is 20 plus years in the game and drops this out. Like, that's incredible. In hip hop, it hasn't been done. Right. You know, I'm a hip hop baby. I'm born in the 70s. Hip hop is my language. It's my music. Like, my parents' language is Motown. So I've heard it all. I've heard rappers after 20 years in the game, and I respect rappers that have been in the game 20 years, but to drop a significant album like this 20 plus years in the game after 96 Reasonable Doubt dropped, it's 2017, so 21 years, you know what I'm saying? He's an adult in the hip-hop game. He can drink alcohol. He's 21, you know what I'm saying? But it's just an amazing piece of work to me. You know, you get songs out of veterans, like, you know, I got songs that LL made in his 18th year or his 20th year that I'm like, this is a hot song. But to have complete body of work like this, you know what I'm saying? And I really appreciate Jay now more than I ever thought I was going to do in his career. I mean, I love Jay's lyrical style. I love the way he flipped words. I love the things. But as an adult, this is adult hip-hop. You know, I'm 41 years old. This is adult hip-hop to me.
So I felt like when Nas came out with Life Is Good a few years ago, that was very adult hip-hop.
Adult hip-hop.
Because of the content, right? The content. He's rapping about his daughter. He's rapping about being a parent. He's rapping about his divorce. He's rapping about real stuff the cats go through, right? And that always spoke to me because, you know, for grading this on a curve, like, right, the degree of difficulty I felt of making a piece like that was very high. Because hip-hop, from as long as we've known it, has always been a young man's game. People just kind of hear that and they just kind of accept it. But with this Jay-Z album, I'm kind of thinking, like, I'm sitting back listening to it, and it's like, why do we have to just accept that? Like, why is it that life experience is not taken, you know, like, why do we look at life experience as not something that should be celebrated in hip-hop? Like, I mean, I understand it's always been a young man's game, and you know, the youth have the ear of the people and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, hip-hop is maturing, is developing. Why is it that we can't listen to somebody like Jay-Z and understand that he's been in the game for 20 years and he might have some different perspectives than some of these cats that just got a deal for the first time or don't even have a deal yet? Like, people want to hear like T Grizzly and be like, okay, T Grizzly got the voice of the people or the ear of the people right now. And like, maybe that's true to, you know, to an extent, but, and I'm not knocking T Grizzly, but I'm just assuming that he's 22 years old, right? Like, I'm just assuming he's that age or thereabout. Jay-Z's twice his age. So you would think that he would have a lot more wisdom to share, right? You know? And the stuff that T Grizzly's rapping about or whatever, Jay-Z really did that stuff 20 years ago. Like he really lived that lifestyle. And I was telling my father-in-law about Jay-Z, and he was listening, because he was riding in the back seat of the car the other day with my wife and I, and he was in the back. And, you know, he's a really religious guy and all that. You know, he's very much into the Lord, and I respect and appreciate all that. But we told him, you know, my wife told him before we got in the car, like, you know, we listen to hip hop now, you know, just don't, you know. And then he was like, oh, that's cool with me. That's cool with me. So my father-in-law gets in the car, and then he's listening to some of the stuff that Jay is rapping about on this new album, right? And he says something like, Jay-Z, so he shot his brother? I'm like, yeah, he did. And I'm like, yeah, he's had an interesting life. Like, he sold dope to his mother. He shot his brother. He stabbed Lance Rivera. Like, he's done a lot of stuff. I mean, he's lived a life that's worth sharing and talking about now. Now, granted, we've heard that story over the years, right? Yeah. But that's nothing that we should just push to the side, you know? I mean, but getting back to the degree of difficulty point, so I've been, in my head, I've been trying to figure out, you know, how to properly place this album and in my opinion, you know, I'm going to step on the tail of the tape that I'm going to do eventually on it, but I'm going to step on it a little bit here. This is, along with Kendrick's album, I think this is the best album of the year to this point. I think him and Kendrick are in a two-man race from what I've heard so far. Now, I know there's some stuff out there that I haven't heard yet, and I've heard some good things about some other artists and some other albums that are out right now that I have not heard or taken all the way in, you know, into the head or whatever. Having said that, though, Jay and Kendrick feel like they stand alone to me.
I would agree.
Okay. Now, having said that, would you say that the degree of difficulty on what Jay has done is higher or lower than what Kendrick has?
I would definitely say higher.
I would too, right?
I would definitely say higher. And even the simple fact of it being Kendrick's third, you know, studio album, maybe major album, yeah. You know what I'm saying? And Jay's however many, 13th. You know what I'm saying, 13th, 14th major album. I mean, that's enough right there. You know what I'm saying? Besides the intricate stuff weaved in,
right.
That's just enough. I mean, like, being somewhere and telling, like I tell my kids all the time, like, they like, what's your best life moment, you know? And I'm like, I have to think about it or whatever. They're like, well, mine is this. And I'm like, yeah, but you're 8 and 6. You got 8 years and 6 years to think about. I have 41 years to think about it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's a little more difficult for me to pull out of this 41 years what's significant to me than what you can do in your 8 years.
Right.
And what you can do in 3 albums is different than 14 albums. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have to be still creative and think of more stuff. Yeah, you're just scratching the surface of what your life is. Right. You know what I'm saying? Your life experience on. And that's what's great about it to me. And the reason why I said that I'm so impressed with Jay is because, like, with the Life is Good album, Nas, it was adult hip-hop, but I expect that from Nas. When Nas came out, he was deeper than any 19-year-old I ever heard of in my life. You know what I'm saying? The stuff that he was saying on Illmatic was grown adult hip-hop at a young age, right. You know what I'm saying? Although it was sprinkled with hood stories and weed smoke, just the in-depth of his mind at that age. Jay was all surface when he came out. Mm-hmm. It was all dope, drugs, and women. You know what I'm saying? Lyrically great, put in a position, talked about it, lived it, but to be in-depth and to talk about his life and the things of that nature now at 40 years old, this is what everybody was waiting on with Jay. This is why people that had Nas as the greatest rapper, and some people still do, and I think Nas is one of the greatest. And the argument with Nas and Jay was, Jay has no substance.
Mm-hmm.
It's all women, drugs, money, cars. You know what I'm saying?
Not a lot of storytelling.
Not a lot of storytelling. Not a lot of
personal insight. I mean, there was some here or there.
Yeah, you know, sprinkled, you know what I'm saying, in stories. You know what I'm saying? But sometimes that's on the song 15 minutes after the album ends, and then the song comes on, and you're like, oh, I didn't know it was a song on here. You got the album 6 months and don't even know it was a song on there. And that's when he gets introspective and in depth. For him to make a piece like this, it was just incredible to me. You know what I'm saying? It shows me his maturity.
Right.
And it shows me hip hop's maturity. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's cool to get old, right?
It's cool to get old. That's what it says. Like,
when are we going to get to that point where hip-hop understands that it's cool to get old?
And, like, I think that does it, because from the reviews of other artists I've heard, it's like, this is what I've been wanting to hear. From the old guys to the young guys, like, you hear, like, Kendrick say, Jay-Z's a great teacher. This is great. You know what I'm saying? You hear guys that he's had beef with, like a Joe Budden, or people that, like, this is amazing. Like, this is what I expect to hear when I hear great hip hop after 40 years old. Like, that's not really what you hear. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, with a Nas, Life is Good, everybody knows that. But Nas has his fan base. You know what I'm saying? Nas is not going to sell out the stores or shut down the internet because his album is coming out.
Right.
True Nas heads are going to buy because they know Nas gives you great music every time he picks up a microphone.
Right.
But Jay-Z is that guy. He's the LeBron of, you know, the industry. So, you know, when the LeBrons come out or when the Jordans come out, everybody's in line to get it. You know what I'm saying? And even if it's trash, people buy Jordans. You know what I'm saying? Like, they could be the worst shoes in the world. They could be the Steph Curry's
with the Jordan brand on them, and people want to buy them and stand in line for them and pay $400 for them. And but to him to give you an album like this at this time, and you expect, it's expectations. Right. You expect so much from Jay-Z, and then you go and he exceeds your expectation. It's incredible to me.
And that goes back to the degree of difficulty piece, because I think the biggest hurdle that was facing Jay at this stage of his career is that nobody wanted to hear what he was talking about. He was in a no-win situation, because either you have the fans that want to hear him rap about the stuff that he'd been rapping about for 15 years, the drugs, the money, the dope game. He creatively rehashed that on American Gangster, and even that was like 6 or 7 years ago, right? But he rehashed, maybe even almost 10 years ago, but he rehashed American Gangster. That was his excuse to get back into talking about dope again. Was that, oh, I saw this movie and it inspired me, and I just had to jump in the studio and record. Like, great, we got a great album out of it. Like, I don't think it's his best work, but I thought it was good, very good. You know, it's probably on the, it was in the top half of his album.
I still
probably
listen to it to this day.
Yeah, so I mean, it was a good album, but it was an excuse for him to go back and talk about dope when everybody was tired of hearing him talk about dope. Then you had the people that are like, okay, well, talk about what you're into now. When he talks about art, people like Drake take shots at him. Or when he's talking about buying the New Jersey Nets and moving them to Brooklyn, which is something that he actually did. He did that. You know, he doesn't get credit for always being the most realest rapper, but that's real. He literally bought a stake in the team and was instrumental in moving it over to Brooklyn, right? So, I mean, but people don't want to hear him talk about that either. They don't want to hear him talk about money. They don't want to hear him talk about being caked up, more, I got more dough than you or everybody else, basically. Like, people, a large segment of hip-hop got tired of him talking about money, and a large segment, or his success in general. And then a lot of people got tired of hearing him talk about dope and the stuff that he talked about when he wasn't as successful, you know, from a financial standpoint or from a tax bracket standpoint or whatever. So he was in a no-win situation. Nobody wanted to hear what he had to say. So that's why I think the degree of difficulty here was great, because Kendrick still has the ear of the people. And so does Drake, and so does a lot of these other guys. But they have the ear of the people based on what they've done lately. Jay-Z's been in this game for so long, and to your point earlier, it's so difficult to reinvent yourself time and time again, to come up with new angles and creative ways to get your message across. Ironically, this album was largely about his marriage, you know what I mean? And you know, being, you know, his infidelity or whatever, or alleged infidelities and things like that. What's funny too is I listened to, when we talked about it earlier, I'm a big Bill Burr fanatic, the comedian from Boston. He's my favorite comedian. I think he's the funniest man on the planet, right? And one of his stand-up specials, I forget which one, it's the one with like the kind of bluish purple background if you look it up on YouTube, right? But he's talking about how there's no roadmap for guys, right? There's no roadmap for guys, especially as once you reach a certain level of success and fame and fortune, as far as how to navigate women. You know what I mean? And how to get around the temptations of women and things like that. Like, there's no strategy for guys. Like, for women, there's magazines, there's books, there's this, there's that, you know, there's Cosmopolitan, whatever. Like, there's all these different resources out there, you know, where women can talk about these kinds of issues that they face as becoming women and how, you know, all that stuff. Guys don't like to talk, though. Guys like to keep stuff to themselves. There's no roadmap for how to navigate those pitfalls, right? If you're a man and you have a marriage and you're successful and you're famous and you want to keep all that intact, how do you do that, right? So here comes Jay-Z, right, talking about not being the next Eric Benet, you know? Exactly. I don't even know what else to say. They can never be the next Eric Benet, right? So that's kind of what he's talking about. He's just trying to hammer home that point. Like, look, man, the grass is always going to appear to be greener on the other side, but it's not always. And putting family first above anything is how you need to operate as a man that's looking to be successful. And he even got into some Godfather analogies, talking about it wasn't until, you know, he had watched it, you know, for the 10th time or whatever, that he was picking up on the things that if a man's house isn't in order, then his life's not in order and things like that. I thought that was remarkable. What was your favorite track on the album?
It's so hard for me because I'm still taking it all in. Like,
I love the Family First track.
Everybody loves that
track.
You
know what I'm saying?
Everybody loves that one.
I hear different things that make me like different. That's why I know it's an excellent album. Because I listened to like Marcy Me the first time, and it kind of, you know, I liked it, I enjoyed it, and then I came back to it like, wow. You know what I'm saying? Like, I really like this song. You know what I'm saying? It's just, I was out of town on vacation for the 4th of July, and I've done a lot of stuff, but I've been taking the album in like bit by bit. Like, the first time I listened to it, I listened to it all the way through.
Right.
Then I would listen to a couple joints at a time. Then I found my favorite. Then I would listen to that over and over again. Then I would go through and listen again, and then I'll find another one I like. It's just, like, to me, it's an awesome project where it's going to probably take me a month or so to say, hey, this is my favorite 1, 2, and 3 joints back to back. But right now, I still, every time I hear something new, I pick something new out of something.
Right.
So, I mean, like I said, it's an incredible work for, it's not even incredible work for a guy that's been in the game 20 years. This is if this was his first album, it's incredible. Like, right. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like I said, comparing it to LeBron's season. Like, LeBron's numbers look extra special because he's in his 14th year. But no matter what year he was in, it's great. This season is great. Like, no matter what album this came after, if it came after The Blueprint, or if it came after Reasonable Doubt, or if it came after one of his less successful albums, it doesn't take any glory off of this album. Like, nothing you would say, well, if this followed Blueprint, it wouldn't be as good. Or it's only good because this last album was okay. This album in totality is an excellent piece of work.
I like the fact that it was short.
And that's why I like no fillers.
No fillers.
You know what I'm saying? No fillers. I'm going to give you straight. And you shouldn't have to, you know, but that's when you own your own stuff, you can do, you know what I'm saying? You can't go to the record company and say, we got 10 tracks, and they're going to say, no.
They can be like 37 minutes. Yeah. You got a half an hour right here.
You got half an hour. That's it. That's all you got.
No. This we're not going to do that. It's the whole thing.
Yeah, we need 14, 15 this. So now you got 5 or 6 fillers in the album with 15 tracks on it.
I think that actually hurt some of his other albums, to be honest. I think the one that stands out to me is Blueprint 3. Blueprint 3, I think, gets a bad rap. That was an excellent album. Yeah. And I don't think that gets the credit that it deserves. But there were like 2 or 3 fillers on there that really kind of, I think, dragged it down a little bit. To where if you cut those out, maybe the album is only 12 or 13 songs, but they're all bangers.
All bangers.
You know what I mean? So I think that's hurt him in the past. And maybe he learned from that a little bit. I think Magna Carta Holy Grail was a little bit like that.
Yeah.
I think I like Magna Carta Holy Grail. I gave it a good review here on Hip Hop Sports Report, but I don't think that it aged well.
No. Yeah.
I don't find myself listening to it a lot. I think people who talk about it in 2017 mostly talk about it in a negative context, which I don't know if that's fair, because a bad Jay-Z album is still better than what percentage of rap, like, right? Like, the majority, you know what I mean? But I also liked on this one that there were not many features, because it felt like Jay, I think, in the past, and he did this a little bit on Blueprint 3, actually, where most of the features were good, except for the track with Drake. That was absolute garbage. But for the most part, Jay had a lot of features on Blueprint 3, but not an insane amount, but he had enough. But they were all, like, young up-and-comers for the most part. You know, I mean, he had his Kanye feature and he had his Jeezy feature, but then he had like Kid Cudi, he had Drake, and he had J. Cole, who was unknown at the time.
Yeah.
So it almost felt like a little like, you know, Malone, Gary Payton chasing the ring, you know, on the 04 Lakers, like he was just trying to latch on, and it feels like a mutually beneficial arrangement when you have Hove getting with these young cats. It's a co-sign for the younger dudes, right? That this old established legend is bringing me on his work. So evidently, I'm legit because I'm a part of his project. And then it keeps Jay-Z relevant with those younger fans as well. So it's not just old heads that's, you know, caping up for him. Whereas, you know, you're getting both generations, so to speak, involved. But I thought it was a complete masterpiece from that standpoint as well. Just kind of, you know, not going overboard with the features. You know, because it was an intimate album. It was intimate because it was short. It was intimate because of the subject matter. He's talking about his wife and his marriage and his family and his children and stuff like that. he's talking largely specifically to black people, you know? He's talking about the black dollar. He's talking about investing in our own communities and our own black-owned businesses and things like that, that some rappers have talked about for a long time, but maybe not on this scale, or maybe not a rapper of his clout has been having those types of discussions. So I was highly impressed from that standpoint. I'm a little worried, though. Are you at all concerned that people are maybe gassing this album too much out the gate? Or does it not matter to you?
It really doesn't matter to me. To me, the content and the substance and the intimacy of the album will make the album have staying power. I mean, anytime you get a Jay-Z album when you haven't had one, it's going to be gassed. Like I said, it's like the Jordans. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like,
but it could be. It works both ways though, because like people are going to like I said, like Magna Carta, people are like overly critical. They're overly critical, I think, of Blueprint 3 also.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think it kind of like whatever, like whether it's gassing or hatred, like I think it kind of can go overboard in the early days
after. It can. I mean, but that's what anticipation is. You know, I like to talk about like Snoop's Doggy Style album.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? The buzz was so much for Snoop's Doggy Style album. When it came out, it bumped. But after it went, the buzz was like, okay, this album didn't live up to what we expected it to be afterwards. But if you actually listen to the album, it's a great album, but it's the anticipation. It's what we expect. It's expectations. You know what I'm saying? So everything deals with expectations. Everybody, but for me, the reason why I think it's so gassed or whatever now, like you said, Jay was kind of in an awkward situation. Like nobody was really checking for Jay. Like, Jay's the legend. Yeah, if this album comes out and people say it's hot, you know, I might buy it because he's the legend. But,
right.
You know, it's kind of like he's not into what I'm listening to right now. He's not weaved into the fundamental of the rap I'm listening to. So, yeah, it's gas because now people are like, wow, this is an excellent album, more than we expected. Now, after time, you might say, hey, yeah, this is, it was a great work, but I gassed it kind of in the beginning because it was where it was at. But like I said, just the subject matter, the intimacy, what he was talking about, those things make an album last long. Mm-hmm. You know, like, once you get past the production, even though I love the production because
No ID killed it.
And that's another thing that made it intimate. Just the one producer.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I'm going to go with this one sound on this one album. We're not going to get the sounds. We're not going to play a club this and do this and try to get people to like it. This is just me. This is me and another genius on this other side sitting down and going at it back to back. And putting out a great product.
Was this his most intimate album, you think?
I would say from start to finish, it was the most intimate album.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it shocked me. You know what I'm saying? Because
He's guarded. He don't let people in like that.
He does not let people in like that. And he's been that way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I think that was
the
downfall of the whole, you know what I'm saying, Rockefeller Records thing. Because he's an introvert and Dame's an extrovert. And
as
you get older, I mean, when you're younger, you might be an introvert, but you can do extrovert things because you're a kid. You do stuff like, that's fun. You know what I'm saying? After a while, when you get to a certain status and you want to really be by yourself and the main person that's with you is like, look at us, look at us, look at us, look at us. And you're like, don't look at me.
You're the star.
Like, you know,
like it'd work great if Dame was the star and Jay was the backup cat.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, look at us. And you're the guy.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And you don't want that attention. It kind of makes things difficult. And I think with him being introverted, for him to let a lot of personal stuff out was just, I mean, that's another masterful way to, you know what I'm saying, captivate the audience.
I didn't know his mother was gay. Did anybody know that before?
I didn't know that.
I didn't know either.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, that's, you know, her, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't time before.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, even on the features on the December 4th and all, you know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't that time because the song wasn't about that. But this album feels like that kind of album, you know what I'm saying? Tell all my secrets, come out the closet, do all the stuff that's hidden. The stuff that's hidden in the dark, I'm like bringing to light, and it's the whole album.
Yeah.
all aspects.
It was kind of like, so like, You Must Have Loved Me was, I think, the last track on Volume 1, right?
Exactly.
That, you could argue that that's the most intimate song he's ever written.
It was.
At least up until this album, maybe.
It was.
I mean, so you, but that was like one song one on that song. Album. You know, the rest of it was Dough to Get, More Shows to Rip.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And then it was that kind of thing, or The City Is Mine, or whatever, you know. But he came really heavy on that last track, and he talks about his brother, and he talks about his mother, and he talks about, you know, his girlfriend or whatever he put on the plane with, you know, with the packs or whatever it was. So that was one song on one album, and there's been moments, there's been flashes of this kind of intimacy and this rawness, you know, but he's really kind of bearing a lot out. And I don't know if maybe Beyonce's bringing that out of him as an artist, or if it's just the circumstances of the situation brought it out of him. I don't know, but I think we're all better off for it, though, as fans of music.
I would agree.
Yeah.
And this is partially growing up, I think.
Yeah. You know? I mean, he's 48.
Exactly.
Could be 48 this year.
Exactly. And they say men mature after women. You know what
I'm saying? I think Jay said as much.
He said as much, you know what I'm saying? But I mean, that's it. It's life circumstances, you know? I mean, being just as yourself, you know what I'm saying? Being the newer father, you know what I'm saying? Like, the way you react to things is totally different than 2 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Like, things make your life
perspective,
different.
Right.
It's a perspective. Right. It's perspective. And you, maybe even some of the stuff that you were guarded about and, you know what I'm saying, were, you learn to appreciate certain things about yourself, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying, in the situation. And I think that's part of it. And like you said, for us as music listeners, keep on, you know what I'm saying? Like, because it, to me, it's great. And the album will never dissipate. Like, the hype may dissipate, but if you actually listen to the context, the food of the album,
mm-hmm.
it's always going to be there. And that's what makes great albums. Great albums, great music. Like, hip hop has always been kind of different.
Yeah.
Because beats and sounds will take you back to a certain time. Like,
right.
I remember this from 92, or, you know what I'm saying? This beat reminds me of that
era.
That era, or that time frame, in your life. You know what I'm saying? That picture, that caption. But, like, music, like Motown, like Sam Cooke, I'm like, it really in the, you know, Sam Cooke and Otis Redding and lyrics and,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying, actual, what people are talking about, that's what captures you. And this album is like that. You know what I'm saying? It's that kind of feel. Like a,
it feels like it could be timeless.
It feels like it could be timeless. That's what you look for as, I think that's what every artist looks for.
Jay benefited too from the fact that the hype was not out of control.
Exactly.
Because of the fact that he was in this awkward position in his career. He's an older guy. He's knocking on 50. You know, his wife is more famous than he is. Exactly. Right? He's not the hottest rapper in the game anymore. You know, he's still a walking legend, a living legend, getting inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame and all that is great. But people just aren't checking for Jay work like that, or at least they weren't up until just now. There was not a lot of buildup. There was a couple billboards that went up in Times Square or whatever. People said, oh, okay, that looked like a title thing. Maybe Jay's got something to do with that. Then it was a confirmation about 2 weeks before, and then the album came out, you know? So I think because of the fact that there wasn't a ton of buildup, I think probably worked to his advantage as well. I want to get your thoughts too on Prodigy. Cause I shared some thoughts about Prodigy on our last podcast, because it actually died, I think, that same day, June 20th, that we taped our last podcast. But I wanted to give you the floor briefly to talk a little bit about him and kind of what his music and his place in hip-hop is to you.
That was part of my era in hip-hop. So, like, Mobb Deep, for me, is one of the greatest two-man groups to ever rap. You know what I'm saying? Like,
the irony of their name I always thought was funny to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's like a long-running joke or not, but in my head, it was always kind of ironic. Like, Mobb Deep, two guys.
Two guys, yeah, exactly. You know what I'm saying? But, like, from the seeing the video of Shook Ones on, like, Yo MTV Raps when it first came out, like, they had their own niche. You know what I'm saying?
They really
like,
did.
And, like, if you mess with Mobb Deep, you've been a Mobb Deep fan from day one. The 90s, you know what I'm saying? And I've always been that way. I always thought P had a unique voice, a unique style, you know, New York to the core, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? But just his own way and his own spin of it. And even through, you know what I'm saying, like, I was always a big Jay-Z fan. Even through the battles and the Jay-Z killing them on wax pretty much and killing them at Summer Jam with the photos. And
right.
I was still always a Mobb Deep fan because for me, like, I don't take it as, you know what I'm saying, people take real in hip-hop wrong to me. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, to me, any hip-hop artist that paints a vivid picture is always going to be, you know, I'm going to enjoy it. You know, like, people always feel like you can't be a reporter. You can't talk about what's going on in your hood. You have to live every single thing. And even if you did to a point, like, Jay has lived life, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And I don't know about Prodigy, but I know his grandmother owned a dance school. He did dancing. I know Tupac went to art school of arts, you know right. what I'm saying? But people kind of say, oh, you can't be real if you were a dancer or if you were into the arts.
It's kind of silly,
you,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, like, so they get this thing like, oh, you rapping about guns and all of this, but you went to the school of arts. Like,
so?
You know what I'm saying? So they look at realness as something different, you know what yeah. I'm saying? Now, I always thought his lyrics were authentic, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? Whether he lived it or somebody else lived it, I felt the authenticness of his lyrics, you know what I'm saying? And like he was, Mobb Deep made some great albums. Like, mm-hmm. I really enjoyed Mobb Deep. It was hard to hear because he the same age as me, you know what yeah. I'm saying? He's a year older than me, you know what yeah. I'm saying? So it gets rough, you know what I'm saying, when you hear about cats your age dying of natural causes, you know what I'm
yeah,
saying?
Well, his situation was a little different.
Yeah, he had an illness, but I had a buddy of mine that had that illness. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? Almost passed away and got sick enough to almost pass away in college. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So I know about the sickle cell disease, and I know, you know what I'm saying, the difficulties. But still, when, you know, it's not car accidents or somebody being shot or traumas, you know, guys dying. Like, yeah, he was sick and he passed away. It kind of hits home, but as an artist, I think P was the whole Mobb Deep movement was live. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna you know what I'm saying, I went back and listened to stuff,
right?
You know,
when I think we all did.
You go back we and all listen did. And the music was great, you know what I'm saying? It stands the test of time. It might not be timeless in the sense of, like, we saying this 444 album is, but it stands the test of time. It's good music, man, and it's always have been. And Prodigy holds an excellent place in hip-hop, and anybody who loves hip-hop music has to respect Prodigy and Mobb Deep for what they did for the game.
Yeah, I heard somebody say that, like, low-key, Prodigy was the hottest rapper in the streets between, like, that period right when HNIC came out, when he went solo for a hot second, like, right around that time, like, maybe 1998, 99, like, he might have had the torch for, like, just a split second, but he might have had the torch in the late 90s. Maybe, I guess, before Jay kind of came out, what I guess would have been Volume 3. You know, DMX was still in the picture from New York. And that was, there was a rise of the South at that point, you exactly. know, with Master P and all those guys. But, like, I mean, you think there's truth to that?
He might have had the torch for just a... I would say that, but he was like that street guy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You had the Nas, the Jay, the DMX, but they were on the Billboard. They were in the hot, like, you...
So, like, literally in the streets. Like, in the streets, like, people use that term, you know, ubiquitously. Like, yeah. Oh, in the streets, you know, meaning, like, everybody or yeah. whatever. But, like you mean, like, literally, like, in the hood or...
Yeah,
you know,
like yeah. On the street level of hip-hop.
Yeah.
He probably did have that torch for a while. You know what I'm saying? When people would say, oh, Jay too commercial, because Jay was about making money, so...
Right.
4 or 5 songs is going to be to be played on the radio.
Right.
Point blank, period. And even at that time, Nas was at the point where, hey, people making money, I got to do this. DMX was, you know what I'm saying, even though it was still hard, rough rock, it was the Swiss beats, it was always Prodigy and Havoc, you know what I'm saying, the
right.
deep, grimy beats.
Right.
So HNIC and all that Mobb Deep stuff, like, he had the pulse of the hood, you yeah. know what I'm saying? And like you said, everything was moving down south at that time, so you needed that New York, you know what I'm saying? That gritty New York music, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like, I always been a fan of, like, Buckshot and Boot Camp Click,
right.
you know what I'm saying? Because they were at that point,
You know what I'm saying? Like, you knew them, but you know what I'm saying? If you weren't real hardcore hip-hop fans, they didn't have that fan base. You know what I'm saying? And that's how I felt like Mobb Deep were. Great music, but just not... You know what I'm saying? They had a couple hits. You know
and
what I'm saying?
And they had some followers. They had a following. They had a following. They were still doing shows overseas.
Exactly. Yeah. They were always going to have a following because their music was good. But they only had a couple of those Quiet Storms where you could be the feature for Lil' Kim and it hits the billboards and the charts. You know what I'm saying? Most of the Mobb Deep stuff, if it wasn't on the rap charts, you would never hear them on like on crossover. You know what I'm saying? Stuff like you hear Jay's music number one on the rap charts, number three on the R&B and pop charts. That wasn't Mobb Deep. You know what I'm saying? Mobb Deep was number 20 on the rap charts, and that's about as high as you get. You know what I'm saying?
Nowhere to be seen on the pop charts.
You know what I'm saying? But they had the pulse of the streets, and they gave that gritty New York sound. They stayed New York when people were doing other stuff because the South was hitting, so they would bring Southern rappers in and try to... Mobb Deep was Mobb Deep. They was New York. It was Queensbridge. It was New York hip-hop, East Coast hip-hop to the core, and they never changed, and I think people respected them for that.
Word. So, kind of merging hip-hop with sports a little bit, was something I wanted to talk about, and I'm doing this because I got the mic on, I got the computer running, I got you sitting here right in front of me, and we don't get to interact face-to-face as much as I would like to anymore because, you know, we live in different states, but...
Exactly.
So, I had a thought, and I approached Kenneth Hicks and Anthony Houston with it, you know, our contributors to the website. I kind of talked about, you know, who's done more for the culture of hip-hop. Like, if you had to pick one rapper... who's done the most for the culture of hip hop over their entire existence, who that might be. And I threw a name out there that is of an individual that's in the news still to this day, but I don't feel like gets the respect that he probably deserves from a cultural standpoint. He gets the respect as an artist, but from a cultural standpoint, I don't feel like he's always recognized as he should be. And it's somebody that you respect and love, and somebody that I respect and love, and somebody that we've talked about before. It's Ice Cube. I don't know if there's ever been a person who's done more for hip-hop culture than Ice Cube. Like, literally no one. Cube, and again, this is at the risk of stepping on another article that I was thinking about doing. I might not do it at all anymore if I'm going to talk about it on the podcast, but that's neither here nor there. That's, you guys don't need to know how the sausage is made, right? I just know that Cube... So I was thinking about the Big Three League. And I've seen a very little bit of it. I haven't really watched a ton of it. I don't know if it's going to stick around for the long haul or not. I just can't get over the fact that he launched a league. He started a league, Vince. A league. Cube launched a basketball league, and it's here, and it's on TV. Like, when I first heard about this, like, a year ago or 10 months ago or whatever it was, it's like, that sounds cute.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, he's going to put together a 3-on-3 tournament? Like it's Hoop It Up or something? Like, oh, yeah, nice. No, he launched a for real league. He got a TV contract. He got ex-NBA All-Stars to be in it. And it's happening before our eyes. And it's just like, wow. Like, another example of Ice Cube doing for hip-hop culture what people don't seem to really give him credit for, in my opinion. Like, when you look at how he started... Just look at his rap career, for instance. Okay, this is a guy who, as a rapper... it was basically the front man for what was arguably the greatest rap group of all time and arguably the most influential rap group of all time, right? He left that group in a way that had epic repercussions and helped shape the history of hip-hop and the reasons behind why he left that group. He was the first one to leave the group. You know what I mean? He was the first one to understand from a business standpoint that they were getting screwed as artists. He was the Kurt Flood of rap.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And crazy part is, he was the youngest of the good guys.
Yeah.
The young guy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Is the one telling the old guys, like, we're getting screwed.
Right, right. So he understands that, leaves, launches a solo career, has a legendary solo career, at least two classics, right? He has arguably the greatest diss record of all time. He has arguably the greatest rap song of all time. It Was a Good Day. Arguably the greatest rap record of all time. With one of the great samples of all time of the Isley Brothers, right? Like, He has all this on his resume, then goes back to the group side, links up with Dub C and Mac 10, is in the heat of the whole East-West beef, which, I mean, you know, there was a lot of negatives that came out of that, but it was still a big point of emphasis for the history of the genre and the culture, right? He was in the middle of all that. Then he branches off into movies. He makes historically epic comedies in the history of black culture, right? Like, multiple comedies. He helped launch the careers of guys like Mike Epps. He helped, I don't know if he only goes as far as say he launched Chris Tucker's career, but maybe. He launched Chris Tucker's career and Mike Epps' career. Like, he did that. He transitioned into television. You know, he's got his own TV shows. He starred in action movies as a star actor himself. He launched Cube Vision, which was his own production company. He's written, directed, and produced big budget films that have been wildly successful. Now he's starting a basketball league. Like, when is he going to get his props?
Yeah, that's very true. Like, that's very true.
Like, I'm just, like, I just look at, like, okay, like, people think of, like, businessmen in hip-hop. They think of Dre. They think of Diddy. They think of Jay. Like, those are the same ones, to a lesser extent, Master P.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the same guys. Like, I don't feel like Cube gets his just due.
And the diversification of Cube's portfolio is 10 times more than anything Diddy, Dre, and those guys did.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm a DJ. I make headphones. I mean, kind of goes hand in hand. Like, I'm not knocking him, but...
Right. You probably, you know, make turntables, too.
You probably make turntables. You know what I'm saying? Great. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm a rapper. I talk about alcohol. I endorse alcohol. I fashion. Okay.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, sure, you made multi-millions off of it, almost $1 billion off of it, but, like, I don't see any... Diddy shows and did, like, he's trying to make a movie, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because this is what's hot right now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and you know what I'm saying? He's about his money. I won't knock
But Cube been making movies for 20 years.
Cube been making movies for 20 years. Good movies for 20 years.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like Tyler Perry. Yeah, exactly. Like, like, you know what I'm saying? Good movies launching careers of guys that, you know what I'm saying, have become faces, name face, and you get people to actually contribute with him and do things with him. This guy is in the Hall of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a group. Just got a star on the Walk of Fame. You know what I'm saying? Like, this, like you said, he's done so much for the culture. And now, who could bring White Chocolate and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The Answer and all of these guys to come to a league and play? Like, You have to have that influence. You know what I'm saying? He's very influential in both sides.
And I don't know that the Big Three League is going to last forever. I don't know. No. It might fold after this year.
It could
but
be.
But I'm impressed enough
that he
launched a league successfully.
I'm very impressed.
You know what I mean? Like, he successfully started off with an idea and was the catalyst behind that idea. And it's now developed into what we have today. And that's a product on television that we can consume during the summer when there's no basketball on TV. Like... I don't know, man. I just don't think that Cube gets enough credit or respect as being a visionary. And, like, I know he's gotten, like, you know, some Lifetime Achievement Awards from, like, BET Awards or whatever, Hip Hop Awards and stuff like that. Like, I get that.
But on the main
music side,
musically, on the street level, you know what I'm saying? Like, just, I mean, yeah, you could be, you can get all these accolades from people who know what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? People in the industry, in the business. But, like you said, like, credibility. Like, if you ask that question to 100 people, how many people would say Cube?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, look at 50. Like, 50 has a big hand in Power, and Power is a hit show. I love Power. I got into it within, like, the last 6 or 8 months or so. I binge-watched all first 3 seasons. Now I'm on season 4. Like, when's the next one coming out? When's the next one coming out? So I watch Power, right? But... like, would 50 be doing Power if it weren't for Cube?
No. No.
Right?
Absolutely not.
Cube had multiple TV shows. Cube crossed over, was doing family movies and stuff like that. Like, Cube, it wasn't all gangsta all the time, you know? So, I mean, just like you said, the diversification in his portfolio, I think, has kind of allowed guys like 50 Cent to do what he's doing now on Power. I mean, I'm just wildly impressed with that guy. Like, I just wish that more people kind of gave him credit for being one of the great figures in American cultural history. Like, that's what he is. That's what he is.
I would agree totally. And, like, period. Not even, like I said, you get a Colgan deal, you can get vodka deals or
right,
whatever.
Right.
But you get Rich or Die Trying, you wouldn't have that movie. You wouldn't have Power. You wouldn't have anything that has to do with television or multimedia if it wasn't for Cube. But without Cube, is anybody really going to take 50 Cent serious coming into a meeting and saying, yeah, I want to pitch this movie. I want to pitch this show.
Right.
And be like, go back to
get
rapping.
Your ass out of here.
Yeah, go back to rapping and selling G-Unit t-shirts. And you know what I'm saying? Like, honestly, you know
it's
what I'm
like,
saying?
Like Kanye. Kanye can't break into the fashion industry. And all he does is bitch about it. He can't break into the fashion industry. He's the first one to do it. He has no predecessor on that level. Like, you got guys like ASAP Rocky that think they're fashion forward, but Kanye's like literally going to like Paris and Milan trying to like do shows and stuff like that, and like he's getting the door slammed in his face.
Yeah.
But Cube fought those battles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he started off with Boys in the Hood and John Singleton and stuff like that. And then he's in Higher Learning and like next thing you know, he's doing his own thing and he's in Friday and he's launching his own company and then it's now he's doing biopics like Straight Outta Compton. And then he's doing 30 for 30s. He's done multiple 30 for 30s with ESPN. Like, he's sports, he's movies, he's TV, he's music. He's a man. Anyway,
he is the man.
He's the man. We'll leave it there. So we got about 10, 15 minutes left, man. I want to get your thoughts on some NBA free agency stuff. You've seen the moving and shaking from some franchises and lack thereof from others. I wanted to get your take on that, specifically with the Cavaliers. I know, obviously, you're Cleveland, you're a Cavs fan, and you just kind of endured the finals like we all did. But if you have any thoughts on that, you're free to share them. But I really wanted to get your insight on free agency, what moves that you like, what are teams doing that you like, what are teams doing that you don't like, you know. Saw the Chris Paul trade, the Paul George trade, the Jimmy Butler trade, Gordon Hayward going to the Celtics. Where do you kind of feel all this is going to lead the league heading into next season?
A lot of the trades, the big trades, have been let's do something and see what happens. Like, who knows about the PG situation? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's probably a 1-year rental. But, you know what I'm saying, if you get to a team that's actually producing and giving yourself a chance to win, you know what I'm saying, I don't know if he would stay or not, just because
he won't.
Because it's OKC, you know what I'm saying?
I don't think he will.
I don't think so either, but it's just the fact of maybe it's for down the road, maybe him and Russ could end up in LA. You know what I'm saying? Like, do I like playing with this guy? Is it, you know what I'm saying, like, that could be for future somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? As far as the CP3 and Harden thing, it's another, you know, people are saying, I don't think it's going to work because I don't think they're going to play together well. But Harden being ball dominant helped on the team that he was on. But I think it takes pressure off of him with the ultimate point guard. Like, Chris Paul is the point guard's point guard to me, like the real point guard,
right?
Like the one of the only ones left, and the great one, the Hall of Fame one.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So,
oh, what do you mean Hall of Fame, man? He hasn't made it out the second round.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
people
these people
are idiots.
Yeah, exactly.
People are idiots.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? But I mean, this guy exudes, you know what I'm saying, point guard out, and so he'll take Harden off the ball and let Harden be able to do other stuff. They put some pieces around him. They can compete. I mean, they were very
competitive last year. Right.
You know what I'm saying? With a different format, but you had Harden doing so much. So I think CP3 thing could be great if they can work together. If Harden can, you know, kind of step back again and not be as ball dominant as he was, because Chris Paul needs to have the ball in his hands. You know what I'm saying? He's an excellent creator, has great vision. He has all the point guard
tools in the tool,
you know
belt.
What I'm saying? The tool belt.
Yeah.
He's Tim the Tool Man of the point guard. He's got everything in the tool belt. So, you know what I'm saying? It's just going to be how they play together. But I think the best signings of the free agency so far were the best trades or signings was Jimmy Butler going to Mini and Gordon Hayward going to the Celtics. I just think those two are excellent fits. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if
they're ready to put the Celtics over the top of the Cavs, but Cavs got a couple years left. You know what I'm saying? Even if LeBron reads up, you know what I'm saying? Like, you got 2 or 3 years. If you can keep that young nucleus with Gordon Hayward, IT, I mean, Al Horford would be like a good third guy.
He's a good third guy.
You know what I'm saying? So it makes him that guy. You know what I'm saying? Again, which is excellent. Instead of, you know, if IT not there, we got to go to Al Horford, then you got a problem. With the young guys they got around them, you know what I'm saying? I think 2-3 years down the line, they're going to be something to deal with. And that's the same way I feel about many. If they can keep with, you know what I'm saying, Cat and, you know what I'm saying, Wiggins and Butler with that young nucleus. And, you know, they swap point guards, you know. But, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, they got T coming in there.
And I think Teague's a good point guard.
I do too.
I think he's been kind of
– I feel like he kind of peaked maybe like in 2015.
Yeah, but I think, you know – some guys don't handle change well, you know what I'm saying? And once, you know what I'm saying, Atlanta, you know what I'm saying, traded him in and he went somewhere. It's kind of hard to get your groove back. Now, you know what I'm saying, he's on a team where he just has to play point guard.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You got scorers out this world.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You got two wing players and a man down low.
All
you know
can
what
get
saying?
You 40.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? All you got to do is distribute. Now, them 15, 16 points you're going to get is going to be automatic because nobody's going to guard you. You know what I'm saying? Like honestly, like...
Nobody guarded Ricky Rubio for years.
Exactly, but you know what I'm saying?
And he never learned how to shoot.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? So, I think it's going to be help for Teague with them, but I think the upgrade of Minnie and Boston are the two biggest upgrades in the offseason so far.
So, let me jump back to the Chris Paul thing. That move is a little bit of a head scratcher because I don't think they naturally fit. And I think from a philosophical standpoint, I'm not the first person to point this out, y'all, but from a philosophical standpoint, Chris Paul is, statistically speaking, one of the great mid-range shooters in the history of the NBA. And he's going to a team that has banished mid-range jumpers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To the point that they literally don't take them. They literally say, either give me a layup or a three. So I don't know if this is just their way of kind of diversifying their offense because people thought they became easier to defend in the postseason. Game slows down a little bit, you know what I mean? They're predictable because they're either if they can't get nothing close to the hoop, they're going to take a three, then they got hurt. So they're never getting anything at the basket unless it's James Harden careening to the basket and getting a foul call. So if that's not it, then they're shooting threes, right? So maybe Chris Paul's influence is he gives them that mid-range piece that he makes you respect it. He makes him respect the mid-range, and you have to honor that on defensively. You know what I mean? But I liken the Chris Paul trade. That's kind of, you know, best-case scenario. But I kind of liken the Chris Paul trade to a few years ago when the Brooklyn Nets, I think it was the year, I think they had Deron Williams, and they may have had Joe Johnson, and they got beat by Chicago in the first round. I think Chicago, like, everybody was injured.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah,
I think it was, like, 2012, 2013, something like that. Everybody was injured, and the Bulls, like, still, I think, won the series. And I think they won Game 7 at Brooklyn, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And everybody was like, this Brooklyn team has no heart whatsoever. And they needed a heart transplant. So that's why they went out and got Paul Pierce and KG.
Yeah.
Because even though those guys were on the downside, they were on the back nine, if not, you know, they were on the 17th hole approaching 18, you know. But they had heart. That was one thing that they had in abundance. They might not have had it physically, but they had the heart. And I look at this as Chris Paul does not have the team success, but he has all the heart in the world. There's no player in the league with a bigger heart than Chris Paul, in my estimation.
Yeah.
I think it's maybe some guys that has as much, but nobody has more, in my opinion. And James Harden, though?
Yeah. Exactly.
He might be pumping Kool-Aid.
Empty soul. That's what he might,
he might be pumping Kool-Aid a little bit. So if there was one guy to help maybe James Harden's maturation from that standpoint, maybe it is a guy like Chris Paul. So that's kind of the best case scenario. I can see that working for them.
It's a very good possibility that can help. And it gives you tenacity to, like,
Chris Paul, he'll stick his face in there.
Yeah, and Chris Paul doesn't get the credit for being as good an on-ball defender he is. And
right.
That helps your defense enormously when the guy at the top
takes the pressure off the guys below you. You know what
I'm
saying?
Well, no, people don't look at it that way, though. You know, people always talked about, like, well, this team needs... They said it about the Cavs. Like, well, the Cavs need a rim protector. The Cavs need a rim protector. How about Kyrie Irving be a rim protector?
That's it.
How about J.R. Smith be a rim protector? That's and how do you protect the rim as a point guard? You keep a guy in front of you.
Exactly.
You keep him in front. That's how you protect the rim.
That's it.
You don't have to be 7 feet tall to be a rim protector.
No. You keep a guy in front of you, and that stops the mismatches. Because yeah. once the guy gets behind you, it's 5-on-4.
Right.
Now everybody's scrambling.
Right.
That's why teams like Memphis are so good. You know what I'm saying? Like, they can't score the ball, but they will hold you to 90 points. Like, that's the reason why Golden State, like, have problems. Everybody, yeah. like, oh, they can shoot. They can score with anybody. No, they can't. Because Conley and
Tony Allen
sticks the guard play. So now, yeah, you don't have to rotate late and try to help and close out. You know what I'm saying? Because right. the man is sticking with the man on the outside because right. you don't have any mismatches.
Right.
That's what the Cavs killed the Golden State in the finals last year.
Yeah.
Curry can't guard anybody. So
exploited him.
Once we exploit him, we're playing 5-on-4.
And Golden State did the same thing to Kevin Love.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, you know what I'm saying? That's the way basketball is. So Chris Paul doesn't get a lot of credit for that, but he's a good on-ball defender, and that's going to help them out defensively.
I've been wondering if Tony Allen has anything left in the tank. I think he's a free agent, and I'm just thinking, like, how come the Cavs don't throw him a little dough? If they could trade Shump, and you know, package him for something, I don't know what exactly. Like, I've heard, you know, speculation that it might just be a salary dump. But yeah. I mean, if you get rid of Shump, and then maybe, I don't know, get you a Tony Allen who's, you know, not quite as good of an offensive player, but what was Shump really giving you on offense? You know, Shump gets you them strips. He gets you them shumps, as they call them in Cleveland, yeah. right? He'll get you those strips going to the basket, but Tony Allen is that all-the-ball guy. I don't know, maybe Tony Allen's washed, and I'm just not sure. I didn't watch enough Memphis either,
but Memphis was still one of the top defensive teams in the league, so,
yeah.
I mean, it has to be up front because, you know, Z-Bo and them guys wasn't great defenders. Yeah. They were never great defenders. Right. So it had to be up front on the wing side or whatever. But like I said, to me, with the Cavs, their big thing is philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And until they change their philosophy, no matter what player, like, to me, Shump is not washed. It's just they focused them on scoring the basketball and took away from what he's good at. It's amazing to me how when Lou took over in the
halfway through last season,
the Cavs were a top 10 defensive team. And a year and a half later, they were 25th or 26th in the league. Like, yeah. that just tells you. With the same personnel. You know what I'm saying? Like, they lost Dele, which was a good on-ball defender. But the Cavs weren't playing Dele 40, 60 million. Whatever he made,
Right.
Congrats, Dele. And he got his own shoe.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? My dude Dele got his own shoe. But
still better than the Curry.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, it's just the philosophy, man. You have to concentrate on playing defense. You have to make defense a priority. The Cavs are not as bad of a defensive team that they showed this year. You know what I'm saying? And if the Cavs play defense, everybody's talking about Golden State has so much more talent than them. I don't believe that.
No, I don't either.
I really don't believe that because they were 3 minutes away from taking game three. They were up. They should have won game three.
Right.
You win game four, you go back to Golden State 2-2 instead of down 3-1. And then they were up 8 points in the first half until they went on a 28-whatever run and Ty Lue act like he didn't have any timeouts left. I don't know what that was about in game five. You know what I'm saying? You're fighting for your life.
Even game five, I think it was like a 4-point game halfway through the fourth quarter.
Halfway through the fourth quarter. They did get back in the game.
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm saying? Everybody likes to see, you know what I'm saying?
They're going
to
see 4-1.
They're going to see 4-1.
And
they're going
to see last podcast too.
And they're going to see, we told you when they bought KD, it was, you know what I'm saying? There was nothing that could offset that. But the Cavs don't play defense. The Cavs had 113 points two games and lost them both. Right. How do you score 113 points and lose both games? If the Cavs had any kind of defense, the series would have been different with the personnel they have. That's why everybody's like, they had to make a big splash and do something different. I don't think so. The philosophy has to change.
Yeah.
They need small pieces. You definitely need small pieces because that's what helps you win. You got to get a lot more off the bench.
I don't know if Jose Calderon is the answer either.
I don't know if Jose Calderon is the answer, but, I mean, Darren Williams was the walking dead in the playoffs. I mean,
I thought he did pretty well in the playoffs. It was just the finals.
Yeah, exactly. The finals. I'm sorry. He was the walking dead in the finals. And
Ty Lue, I mean, didn't get the most out of Kyle Korver. You know what I'm saying? Like, I always say that. Like, people like, oh, they should get rid of Kevin Love or they should get rid of Kyle Korver. Yeah, Kevin Love was 1-for-9, but he only took 9 shots. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, it's hard to get a rhythm. You know what I'm saying? We only take 9 shots.
He had foul trouble. He had foul trouble in game 5.
He had foul. But you know what I'm saying? Like, even when the games he was bad, like, Kevin Love don't shoot the ball 24 times like Kyrie and LeBron.
You know what's funny? Is how everybody thinks that Draymond's a better player than Kevin Love. Like, I just find it funny how everybody, like, casually, just flippantly, just throws out, Golden State has 4 Hall of Famers. And I just be like, Draymond Green, like.
But the crazy thing about it is.
I mean, they've lowered the standard of the Hall of Fame. So he probably will get in. Yeah, he probably will get in at some point. But I'm just saying, like, I mean, come on. Like, I mean, if you want to throw Klay Thompson in there because he's one of the great 3-point shooters the league has ever seen. He could put up 60 points in 30 minutes and stuff like that. Okay, I'll give you that. You want to put Steph in there? I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
Draymond, if you want, I mean, you can put KD in there. Obviously, KD's a Hall of Famer for sure.
Yeah,
Draymond Green, I think he averages 9 points a game for his career. I know he's a defense first player.
Yeah,
he won 1 Defensive Player of the Year, and I think finished runner up twice. He was a key cog in these Warrior teams. Don't get me wrong, but I just, you know, Kevin Love, on a bad team, Kevin Love averaged 26-12, which nobody was doing. And on a good team,
as a third option.
He's a third option. He's averaging 20-10, and he's winning a championship. So, like, Kevin Love is all NBA twice. Second team. Like, I don't understand how Kevin Love is not considered a quote-unquote Hall of Famer. Nobody says the Cavs have 3 Hall of Famers. Yeah. They never say that. They only say Golden State has 4.
But this is ridiculous. This is the thing. This is Kevin Love as the get no love guy. You know what I'm saying? He should be Kevin No Love because he gets none. But this is, if everybody says Kevin Love should be traded, they're looking for deals to involve Kevin Love. Look at the finals. 5 games. Kevin Love outplayed Klay Thompson and Draymond Green in 5 games.
Yeah.
Look at the stats.
Yeah.
Nobody says, oh, we should trade Klay Thompson because they won.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, nobody was even saying.
You don't
got to
blow it up when you win.
You don't have to blow it up when you win. Everybody took it for granted. So, the Cavs need to make minor moves, but they need to get back a defensive identity. Cavs get back a defensive identity, they'll be right in it again. Yeah. I was worried about the Cavs the whole year. You know, everybody else was
more. About
you know what I'm saying? Everybody else was, I'm like, the Cavs could win a championship or lose in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, you did.
You know what I'm saying? That was so unpredictable defensively.
Right.
And it wasn't about scoring. We know we could score.
Right.
Even if Kevin Love has a bad game and scores 10 points, with Kyrie scoring 40 and LeBron scoring 40, that's 90 points. We can score, you know what I'm saying, like
120.
Even Kevin Love, when he had 27 and Kyrie had a bad game, they still, the big three still had like 75 points, 80 points. Like, we're going to be able to score the basketball.
Right.
If we can't defend, they won't win. And this is, and it's a philosophy. And it's Ty Lue's philosophy that he wants to run up and down the court. And it may work 95% of the time or 9 out of 10 teams. But you can't beat Golden State
playing that way.
You know what I'm saying? You don't counterpunch with a counterpuncher. You don't slug with a slugger. You don't hook with a hooker. Those boxing terms. It's the same thing. You don't try to outscore a team that scored.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You don't.
Right.
You know, you put the game, slow the game down pace defensively. Put it to one-on-one possessions where the possessions count at the end of the game. And it's been proven in the clutch that Kyrie is more clutch than Steph. It's been proven in the clutch LeBron is more clutch than anybody. They can say what they want to about KD. KD wasn't clutch when he had to carry a team. When he was part of a team, oh, he makes everything.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Oh, KD is supplanting LeBron and
No. No. Let's stop the foolishness.
Let's stop the foolishness. So you put it down on one-on-one possessions. You play defense and put it down on one-on-one possessions and let your talent play against their talent. And it's a different
It's going to be interesting. They might lose JaVale McGee, who actually played well for them Golden State.
He did, but I was surprised.
Yeah, but they did get Nick Young, apparently. So,
Nick Young.
You know, and they brought back Iggy and Livingston.
That was the biggest points to me.
Yeah.
Like, Iggy to me, like, I told people, like I said, I was in Texas and San Antonio. You went to go visit the Spurs or whatever.
Mm.
And but I said, if Iggy leaves Golden State, they will not win the championship with the foreign tech.
Yeah.
And they like, oh, they still got the – doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like,
he's a key guy. He's key.
In big games, he scored 20 in the finals.
In game five.
They was up – like you said, they was up 4 points. If Iggy don't score those 20 points, they lose game 5.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's – he does stuff even – when LeBron's scoring 40,
he was like Tayshaun Prince was on the Pistons, except better. He's better than Tayshaun Prince.
Exactly.
And I look at the Celtics. I just they've made moves. The Celtics are absolutely a better team than they were you know, a few days ago, but they're not catching the cast with this team. I mean, like, Jason Tatum looks like he's going to be promising. And you add Gordon Hayward, who's, like I said, like the 20th best player in the league, to a team that already has two top 10 guys and three top 20 guys. They're not beating the Cavs, not next year. But we got to wrap it up right there, man, because we're just about over on time. But thank you, Vince. Appreciate you. Welcome me into your home as usual, and then hopping on the podcast once again, talking a lot of rap music and NBA basketball. We'll be back at y'all soon enough. You guys know where to check us out, hiphopsportsupport.com. You know where the website is. You know where to find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Holla at us, y'all. We out.
Holla.
Peace.
No doubt.